SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two, live right here on this Tuesday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Still 2 hours left up until 11 a.m. Eastern time, and so much to get into here in this second hour. We'll hear from Keith Stewart up next, looking back on a historic and tremendous run for one Scottie Scheffler, 6 wins in his last 10 starts, 6 wins before July, something we have not seen since the King, Arnold Palmer, back in 1962. And where were you when you learned the 2024 NBA draft starts tomorrow? Was it on this Tuesday morning around 9:03 a.m. Eastern time? Maybe so. I think Donnie just figured it out last week.
Yeah, I think this segment right here is probably 8 minutes, a little bit too long, as we're going to be talking about some NBA. I'm telling you, like, I don't mean to bemoan the subject here, but what, like, yeah. You can skip a year NBA draft. Like, can't you just be like, look, this draft is terrible. Let's throw all these guys re-enlist into next year's draft, and it might be really good at this point. Because I'm telling you right now, like, sometimes it's sarcasm and you put on a show, but the amount of time we've spent on talking this NBA draft to hear about Reese Shea and Sar, I mean, this is, but yeah, this might make for great content as it plays out, because this draft is horrendous at this point, Ben. I mean, help me out here.
I mean, it would be very funny to say, all right, guys, we're not doing one this year. Everybody go to 2025. I still find the beauty in this draft. It is not as good. Maybe so. It is not as good in comparison. I know. Hey, let's see Zachary Rizashay on Illinois, or send him to Northwestern to learn the American style of basketball. That'd be something. Now we are kind of thinking. It's not as good, of course, in context or comparison to drafts we have seen in years past. It pales in comparison to last year, when the focus was on the generational talent, Victor Wembanyama. But there are still storylines, like who is going to go number one overall. We have seen drastic odds movement in the last 5 or 6 days. That's always fun for us on a sports betting network. And of course, Bronny James is a part of the conversation. Where were those college superstars like Zach Edey or Baylor Shireman or Dalton Connect or the young guys out of Kentucky fall into the lottery? There are still many storylines, but in comparison, it's not as good. But I believe it was Ernest Hemingway, DRS, that once said, comparison is the thief of joy. Enjoy what you see here in the present. We will do so tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, here on Sports Grid's NBA Draft Special. Myself, Kevin Walsh, and the coach, James Young, live from our Bellworks studios.
Yeah, and how about this? Like, you know what you guys should do? And again, the producers behind the scenes, call Anthony Bennett up. Get him on the air live and ask him the same questions. Like, how did it feel to be Anthony in a Bennett terrible draft where you're actually memorialized now as being that draft was so bad? Because that's what I'm expecting out of this. And by the way, Ben, like, Reese Shea and all that, like, why did you just drop those guys into the Big Ten? Like, what's that about here? Like, you don't want to send them to the ACC, you know, the SEC at this point? You drop them right into the Big Ten? Handle their business?
I want them to learn the ways of Big Ten basketball. I want them to understand that 53-49 can be a victorious game as well.
Minnesota.
Although I think in Euro basketball, like, FIBA rules are even more physical than the old Big East. But let's talk about Rizashay and where he stands right now. Minus 270. Zachary Rizashay to be the number one overall pick. It's what the Atlanta Hawks hold at this moment. Donovan Klingon, second best price at plus 340. I will present the interesting odds outlook for Klingon, who has the second best number to be the number one overall pick, but is not a favorite for any of the other selections in the top 10. It's not often you see that. And Rizashay has become the hefty odds-on favorite to be that first overall selection in front of his countryman from France, Alex Sarr, who has fallen now to that number 2 overall pick that the Washington Wizards hold. And Sarr, a hefty favorite there at number 2 at minus 700. And yet there's that interesting distinction. If Klingon does not go 1, where does he fall in the lottery or even the top 10?
You know, it is interesting on that. And also, you know, not having that timeline here, are we hearing any ideas, Ben, about any trades that could go down in that top three here? Because it wasn't so long ago, me being a Philadelphia 76ers fan, where you go out and make that trade for Markelle Fultz with the Boston Celtics, which ended up giving the Celtics Tatum and a handful of draft picks here. So it's not uncommon that we've seen that one, two, or three pick being traded. Have we heard any thought processes that maybe we could get a surprise deal over like the next 24 hours?
It would not surprise me. I think part of the reason being, DRS, that no team is in love with maybe some of the prospects that we will see in the top 10. The Spurs have two picks, fourth and eighth. Could they package something? I'm not entirely sure. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see at least one trade in that top 10, maybe even a trading of the rights, as we often see in the NBA draft. But nothing that I know of, at least as of right now. The Atlanta Hawks were rumored, or at least speculated for a while, would they hold on to that number one overall pick? By the way, just the second ever time Atlanta will draft first overall. In their last number one draft pick, David Thompson didn't even ever play for the Hawks organization. Started his pro career in the ABA and then ended up, of course, with the Denver Nuggets. The Washington Wizards selecting high at number two overall. The Houston Rockets have that third overall pick. And again, a couple of names to note as you look at the top 10 and some more market movement. Donovan Clingan was the favorite to be the sixth overall pick yesterday. That's according to our stat man and producer, Joe Friezo. Now he doesn't even have the second best price to go sixth overall. That's Dalton Knecht, one of the best scorers last year in college hoops for Tennessee. Would just be the third ever lottery pick in program history for that Vols basketball program. Reed Sheppard, now a hefty odds on favorite at minus 190 to go third overall to Houston. If that is the case, Kentucky would have a first round selection for 17 consecutive years in the NBA draft. Klingon's UConn teammate, Steph Castle, the favorite to go fourth overall, and Matas Buzelis has the best price to be the fifth overall pick as well.
And also, taking a look at that, you know, let's just say top six or seven, do we have any high risers in this draft here? Because as we know, the one thing that, you know, I always bang on this draft with being not as talented, which might add to a lot of intrigue of where these guys are actually going. Could we see a guy like a Dalton Knecht that, let's just say he does go six or projected to go six, actually bounce into the top five at this point? Are there any guys that could catch that late attention that maybe some of the betting public is sleeping on here, Ben?
You know what is a great thing, DRS, is the fact that we now have a pretty full roster of betting odds for the NBA draft in the first round tomorrow. That was, of course, the expected outcome. But even two and a half weeks ago, we didn't have much beyond who the favorites were to be a top five pick in each and every one of those draft slots. Now we have top five pick odds. Klingon, minus 210. Steph Castle, minus 170. Matas Buzelis at minus 155 as well. I need to look up his pronunciation, and we will do that before our show tomorrow. But the guy that JY referenced, Salon, is 12-1 to be a top five selection. Nikola Topic was going to be considered a top five, top 10 pick, but did not measure nearly as long as they expected from a wingspan perspective. And of course is dealing with the ACL as well. Now 60-1. If the year was not 2024, but 1994, we'd probably see Zach Edey in the top 10, if not number one overall. He's 100-1 to be a top five pick.
Hey, a lot of guys are getting the benefit of the doubt in this one. You're right. Like, could we see, like, let's just say this draft was actually stacked. You would also start the question, like, where is Zach Edey going to go? Is he a first-round draft pick at this point? So a lot of guys here that turn pro, it's almost like winning the lottery themselves. Like, hey, normally I wouldn't be a first-round draft pick. You get that first-round paycheck, you're going to be in the NBA for at least 3 to 4 years with a guaranteed contract, and that's a big win in itself. So if this was the year to go pro, like a Bronny James, this is the year that you want to do it.
And we are seeing some changing numbers for Bronny James. His draft position prop was 44 and a hook. Now it's 47 and a half, and the over has the heavy juice. There's only 58 total picks in this NBA draft, and of course, night two is on Thursday. The Lakers now into minus money to select Bronny James. We'll hit the PGA Tour up next here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Tuesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid, we welcome on Keith Stewart to look back at last week at the Travelers, where Keith was in Connecticut, and more dominance out of Scottie Scheffler. And then we will look forward at this week's Rocket Mortgage Classic in the greater Detroit area as well. Keith, thanks so much for taking the time to join us here on this Tuesday.
Ben, Donnie, you know what? I'm here, but I might be doing this under protest. You know, Sunday did not work out the way that I wanted that thing to sweat. I tell you, Scottie Scheffler coming back again. This guy has won, what, you know, four of the last five signature events. He's killing us all.
Six wins here before the month of July. Six victories in his last 10 starts on the PGA Tour. The most wins we have seen in a single year since Tiger Woods back in 2009. The most wins prior to the month of July since Arnold Palmer back in 1962. Historic is one word to describe what Scottie Scheffler has done. Dominance, potentially another. Keith, how would you describe this run for Scottie Scheffler?
Well, I take the run back a couple of years. I mean, he's played 53 events since he won that first time at the Waste Management Phoenix Open back in 2022. He's got 11 wins in that stretch. He's got seven runner-ups. He's got 22 top fives in 53 events. I mean, this guy, his level of dominance, and it all comes from ball striking, because we know that the putter can go back and forth on him. It's like a roller coaster ride. But I tell you, it's extremely impressive. And I tell you, he's reaping the rewards of it, that's for sure. I mean, he's number one on the money list right now at $27.7 million, guys, for this season alone. And the season's, you know, we haven't even gotten to the FedEx Cup playoffs yet.
I'll tell you, it's really incredible to watch it play out, too, because we're so accustomed to Scottie Scheffler playing great on a week-to-week basis. And even when he doesn't, let's just say at the U.S. Open, to be able to bounce back and fire a 22-under to get into a playoff here and win that here against, you know, it's just phenomenal to see it. And also what that bodes for the future, because I always like historic things that we take a look at, Keith, right? Something we haven't seen in a long time. Like, what is when we talk about sky, like, the sky is the limit right now. We still have a half of a golf season, it feels like, to go in another major. Like, where's Scotty going to take us this year?
Oh, I tell you, Donnie, that's a great question. I mean, just perspective alone, right now he sits fifth on the career money list of the PGA Tour. So Tiger's number one at $121 million. This guy's got over $70 million, and he's played in about less than half the events that Tiger played in. I mean, he's making over $500,000 per start at this point, and he's only got 12 wins in two majors. I mean, Tiger, you go back, he made about $321,000 per start in over his 377 starts, right? I mean, if anybody, what Scotty's doing, it's just absolutely amazing. You know, and really, I'm out there every week, guys, and when you watch the ball striking, like through my PGA eyes, I mean, even like you go back to Sunday, they move the hole on him to start the playoff, and the guy still hits it to 10 feet. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's just – it absolutely – nothing rattles the guy. I mean, there's police running all around that green. If anybody should have been, you know, a little bit gun-shy, it should have been Scotty. Be like, they coming to get me? Is this Louisville or what are we doing, right? I mean, this guy, he is just so stoic. He is such a good professional. He's such an amazing ball striker. We are witnessing greatness. There's no doubt about that.
Scottie Scheffler not in the field this upcoming week in Detroit. Detroit Golf Club, the site for the 2024 Rocket Mortgage Classic. Keith, as you look at Detroit Golf Club, the venue for this event, how will it affect and how will this track play for the field this week in the Motor City?
Well, what's interesting, guys, is that when the field first came out, you know, I was like, oh, this could be a rough week because we've just come off five, like, basically elite events in the last 7 weeks. But you know what? They got 10 guys in the top 50 in the world. It's a par 72 golf course. This is the sixth edition of the Rocket Mortgage Classic right there at Detroit Golf Club. They have a north and a south course there. It's a composite. They use some holes from both golf courses. 7,300 yards. You get four par fives. And of course, this is one of those birdie for back-to-back weeks. You got to either go low or you're going to go home. 156 players in the field, top 65 in ties get to the weekend. If you want to basically take this thing down, it becomes a glorified putting contest. The guys that are winning this thing are gaining over six strokes on the field with their flat stick. There's not a lot of penalty off the tee. You've got to be a great wedge player and a great par four scorer. I mean, four of these par fours are under 400 yards.
Wow. It should be definitely getting some scoring here. But if we are looking at the players, so many times we're handicapping tournaments, looking at the best players in the world, and it's a handful of guys that you can bet on. From a handicapping perspective, I love tournaments like this year, Keith, because you can take a look at guys that aren't used to winning week to week on the PGA Tour like Scottie Scheffler. Give us some opinions here on some guys that can actually win this tournament and maybe even some longer shots as well.
Well, Donnie, that's a great point. I mean, everybody looks at these events like they're random, but I actually don't. There's a very specific path that I was just starting on right there on how to win this golf tournament. You have to be an excellent putter from 5 to 15 feet. You've got to be great with a wedge. And then those guys, we know who they are. And some of them are further down the board. And without some of the elite players there that are just so well-rounded, some of these guys are going to stand out. I'm a little worried about Tom Kim and Akshay Bhatia at the top of the board. These guys, Tom Kim, this is his ninth event in a row. Akshay, it's his eighth event in a row. To me, at some point, fatigue's got to take over. And it's been hot out there. Trust me, guys. It has been very warm. Cam Young, you know, again, you need the putter this week. I know he had a runner-up here a couple years ago, but when he shots 59 on Saturday, he actually lost strokes putting on the back nine at the Travelers. I mean, I don't even know how it's mathematically possible, but he did. So I'm looking a little bit further down the board. I like a good bomber like Taylor Pendrith, who's excellent with the putter. I mean, there's some guys down there, too, in triple digits, like an S.H. Kim that's an unbelievable putter, and the guy gets the ball in play. And you look at, you know, one of those comp courses like TPC Craig Ranch. I mean, that's a great spot there to look at. You know, S.H. Kim finished fourth there. Taylor Pendrith won there. So those are the types of players that you want to put into your betting card.
Not a signature event this week in Detroit, so maybe we do have that big plus money long shot value out there in the Motor City. Detroit Golf Club, the home for the 2024 Rocket Mortgage Classic. Tom Kim edged out, of course, by Scottie Scheffler in that playoff at the Travelers last week, listed as the favorite right now. Cam Young trying to carry the momentum from a 59 on Saturday. That a very rare feat on the PGA Tour. Keith Stewart, we appreciate the time. As always, thanks for being here on this Tuesday on the Early Line.
Absolutely, Ben, Donnie, great to talk to you guys. And enjoy the Rocket Mortgage. I mean, this is a great week to win some money. Let's get some. Scotty's not in the event.
We will do that for sure. And Donnie's favorite segment comes up next. The soccer synopsis from yesterday here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The soccer synopsis, live right here on this Tuesday morning on the Early Line on Sports Grid between your two premier pitch handicappers on the Spiz Grizz Network. Yesterday, a thrilling ending in group play action between Italy and Croatia. The Italians needed to at least, I think, draw to advance to the knockout round of the Euros and to finish second in their group. They were down 1-0 to Croatia until the death in stoppage time, 8 or 9 minutes in stoppage time, and they find the back of the net with just about 1 minute remaining in regulation. Italy draws Croatia 1-1. Spain, as Anthony DeBundo, who actually knows soccer, told you yesterday, has looked very impressive. 1-0 victory over Albania.
Yeah, and watching the game yesterday, that Italy game, it was interesting to see how it ended. And also, you want to talk about a chippy game where they were handed out yellow cards like Tic Tacs in that one down the stretch with everybody crashing into each other. But that was an unbelievable goal by Italy. And I don't know if it was going to be official yesterday if they didn't at least get that draw. You'd have to wait to see what played out. But it felt like yesterday, if they didn't get that draw in that game, odds on they were not going to advance in the tournament there for the Euro. So a monster goal by Italy to actually tie the game and move on, I think, to the round of 16 at that point. It was fun to watch. But the one thing I always get a kick out of here in soccer, you equate this back to, let's just say, I don't know, the 1980s NFL, and you see the K-gun offense that was put in for the Buffalo Bills. The reason they put that in, Ben, was because they're like, you know what? It's so hard to stop this team from scoring in the final 2 minutes that the Buffalo Bills and Jim Kelly said, let's just make this our entire offense. The reason why I'm bringing that up is, how come in soccer, the final 8 minutes were so exciting here, and the entire game was so damn boring? Why can't we just play with that type of offensive urgency the entire game as opposed to walking around and kicking it backwards here? If I had one thing to change in soccer, one thing if I was commissioner, if you kick the ball backwards, you lose possession of the ball. How about that? Wouldn't that make for a better game?
What are you commissioner of in soccer? Is it MLS? Is it Premier League?
No, of soccer. All of it. All encompassing here.
You are running FIFA.
Me.
A profoundly upstanding organization that under the tutelage of Donnie Wrightside, I'm sure would never, ever delve into the murky waters of which they do now. Good.
No, we would never take bribes. Listen. And if you pass the ball backwards, you lose the ball. And also, if you go down, like you get, I would have also, give me VAR. Points. You know how they go like this, Ben? Little VAR right here. Let me get this straight. VAR would be for every single so-called penalty. And if you spun around more than two times on the ground by getting clipped in the leg and I deem it wasn't really a foul, you're off with a red card for the rest of the game. I'm tired of seeing people rolling around as if they got hit by a sniper from the upper deck when they just got touched on the ankle. I could make so many changes where you guys would enjoy soccer so much more than you do now. Ben, every game, 6-5. Every single game, we'd love soccer at that point. We'd love it.
The two main components of Donnie's campaign for the head of FIFA. One, I will not take bribes. Two, if you pass the ball back, you lose possession. We've got some more group play. Yes. That's what you need. Some more group stage action on this Tuesday. France, a hefty favorite against Poland. The Netherlands, the Dutch look pretty good as well. Now, even money. And again, these are the 90-minute results, so just take that into mind, where a tie also included. Now, again, I don't know much about soccer. I just follow things around my social media timeline. I can tell you the English, they want it to come home. They expect it to come home. And England not all that happy right now with Gareth Southgate, the manager of this English side. Gareth Southgate, if you will, they are a hefty favorite today in their final action against Slovenia, a -750 favorite to win the group. I think the English need to perform today if we are not going to see some very angry Brits there in Germany.
I believe they will. I believe they will. And also, let me get the commissioner's hat back on, Ben. Here's what we can do as well. Every sport that you watch, there is a timekeeper. When the ball goes out of bounds, when there is a penalty, stop the clock and restart it. The extra minutes at the end where it could be one minute, 2 minutes, or 8 minutes here are so arbitrary. Exactly. We don't need stoppage time. Stop the clock so everybody knows exactly. Can you imagine an NBA game where we're trying to win an NBA championship and nobody knows when the game is going to end at the end of the game? Madness here. You make me commissioner. The United States as a whole will join forces with the rest of the world. So you know what? This game actually makes some sense, and we would love to get involved in it. Oh, come on. We're waiting here. We're waiting in the U.S.
If any true soccer fans are watching this segment, my sincere apologies. Yesterday, on the second day of Copa America, I mean, maybe so. If anybody can be in Donnie Wrightside's camp, they will. The Brazilians draw with Costa Rica. I'm pretty sure that is a shocking result at Copa America. In Colombia, knocks off Paraguay. I know James Rodriguez had an absolute dandy of an assist to find the back of the net for the Colombians. It's a Commissioner's Cup day in the WNBA.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A title is at stake in the WNBA. It's the Commissioner's Cup Final tonight between the New York Liberty and the Minnesota Lynx, and we will preview the game and the cup on the line in just a little bit. But we use this time to reset. Off day of the W yesterday, just a singular cup championship game on this Tuesday to look at the season in its early goings. And we do that now with Miles Ehrlich joining us here on this Tuesday on the early line, senior writer for Winsider, covering all things around the WNBA. Miles, we appreciate the time. Thank you for being here on this Tuesday.
Thanks for having me. Excited to do it.
So let's look at this season so far. Of course, there has been more attention than ever on the WNBA. Sometimes the discourse has been a little bit insane and not focused on the actual action on the hardwood. But with that notoriety comes the eyeballs and the conversation around. Miles, we do things here from the basketball perspective and the odds perspective first and foremost, and we focus on where things are. Nearly 20 games, nearing the halfway point of the 40-game regular season in the W. Right now, the New York Liberty, last year's runner-ups, the best team in the WNBA, 15-3. But the Sun and the Lynx also there with 13 wins, and the Seattle Storm also joining them in double digits. When you look at the rosters and the table right now in the WNBA, what has the story been to you so far to begin this season?
So it is kind of what you referenced at the jump, which is it's the rise in popularity. It's the growth of the sport. It's anecdotally, it's having conversations with people everywhere who are tuning into games for the first time. It's looking at Liberty merch everywhere around Brooklyn, and not just on game days. It's going to the park and seeing it, the extra broadcast, the longer programming, more storytelling. And I looked at Across the Timeline, which is a terrific resource for all things W, and average attendance that is at its highest number since 2002. And it's built at a significant rate every year since the pandemic. So this is the growth that I've been anticipating since I started covering the sport back in 2019. And it's just awesome that all of that's here, even with, like you said, some of the discourse that isn't always basketball related.
Yeah, it's really fantastic to watch because a lot more fans are being brought into the tent by this awesome rookie class. But if we are taking a look at the standings here in the WNBA, it's great to see some of the parity. Top three teams with three losses here, then that middle of the pack. But one of those teams here that we take a look at the middle of the pack is the Aces at 8-6. Are we surprised here, Miles, that we're taking a look and saying, you know what, the Aces in the middle of the pack as opposed to the front of the pack right now?
It's surprising, yes, because you never expect to see the Aces that low, but also no, because they were without Chelsea Gray, their point guard, until very recently. Since Chelsea has come back, they've won two straight, and that's with her coming off the bench, but they've just looked like a different team. They just look much more comfortable with her on the floor. And I think that they're going to just rebound and be the team that we expected. And with four Olympians going to Paris next month, it might not be the worst thing that their minutes have been down a little bit and that they haven't been in as stressful and as high-pressure situations so far.
Yeah, before Chelsea Gray returned for Las Vegas, the Aces had dropped three in a row, the first three-game losing skid since 2019 in four of their previous five. And then you saw what Chelsea Gray brings to the Aces. 16 minutes in her season debut off the bench, seven assists as the orchestrator of that offense. And despite, Miles, the struggle at least throughout the regular season in all things comparison-wise for Las Vegas, they remain the title favorites at plus 135. The two-time reigning WNBA champs, but not all that far behind. The team Las Vegas edged out last year, the New York Liberty, at plus 190. Four teams at this moment with three digits next to their WNBA championship odds. In your estimation, Miles, how many teams can realistically win the WNBA title this year?
So I think that six teams can make noise in the postseason. Las Vegas and New York, like you said, but also Connecticut, Minnesota, Seattle, and Phoenix. With the amount of talent on those rosters, any of those teams can win a playoff series. That being said, assuming that these teams are healthy come playoff time, I don't know if I'd go beyond the Aces and the Liberty. There's something to be said for the number of mismatches they can create all over the court, and these two franchises still feel to me like they're on a tier all their own.
If we are taking a look at some of the best players on the best teams, which leads us into the MVP market, it seems like we might have a runaway here with Asia Wilson, a minus 290 price here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, followed by Collier, Thomas Stewart, and Jones. Are we looking this as Asia's to lose at this point here, Miles?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was a lot of discourse about one voter last year putting Asia in fourth place in a three-horse race, and that seems to have motivated her this season. She is leading the league in scoring at 27.8 points per game, which is nearly 4 points ahead of Arike Ogunbowale, who's in second place, and she's pulling down a league-high 11.6 boards a night, all while being the hub of that Vegas defense. It's also just the intangibles that Asia brings. It's her leadership. It's her charm. It's her jocularity. Any sports league would be happy to have Asia as their signature athlete. So she's just doing it all on the court and off the court. It just feels like there are some good seasons happening, but nothing is coming close to what Asia has been doing in Vegas.
I mean, look at those numbers. Asia Wilson, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Miles. Please.
I did want to add on one thing to note, though, is that it's been over a decade since a team that hasn't finished top three in the standings has had the MVP. So if you are looking at that, I do think Asia, between the narrative and just what she's done, might transcend that. And we can see Vegas go off on a dozen game winning streak in the second half. But that is something to keep in the back of your mind if you are thinking about this from a betting perspective.
That trend perspective, always a good thing here on the early line. Asia Wilson won the WNBA MVP in 2022, felt rightfully spurned a year ago, and we've seen that in her performance, nearly 28 points per game, over 11 rebounds throughout this season. Miles, you mentioned what she means for the WNBA as a whole. Her playing style on the floor, what is the reason for Asia Wilson's dominance each and every night within the WNBA?
She's just such a consistent scorer. And I think that that's around the rim. That's her mid-range game. And she's just gotten better and better. She goes left. She goes right. She seals so deeply. She runs the floor. It's really everything that you could want. And now that you're bringing back Chelsea Gray is just one of the best passers who's always looking for her. Asia's got great hands. She just does it all. And I think that that kind of consistency, that kind of stability is what you need if you're going to have any chance at not just repeating, but then going for three in a row.
Miles, let's take a look at this rookie class that has been absolutely sensational here, bringing in the ratings and certainly the play to back it up. You take a look at Caitlin Clark here, 16.3 points per game, 6.6 assists per game, 5.4 rebounds per game, and rookie of the year odds here coming in at a minus 950 price. If we had to assess the early part of Caitlin Clark's career, is it about what you expected, or is she exceeding expectations? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I don't know the last player that had these kind of external expectations put on them. But Caitlin is pretty much exactly in line with where my expectations would have been. 16.3 points per game is 16th in the league. She's fifth in assists, like you said, with 6.6. The three-pointers, she was shooting 14 a game when she was in college, and now that's down to 8 a game. So she's only making 2.8, which is still top five in the league. But the percentages aren't quite where we would love to see them. I think what we've seen from Caitlin recently is that she's getting more comfortable on the court and that she's facilitating more. She's taking fewer shots, but more efficient ones. So I think we're seeing her learn in real time, which is exactly what we should expect from a rookie. So it's been overall a success. And now that success is starting to come on the court as she kind of gets more comfortable.
It was a grueling stretch to begin the year, 11 games in 20 days, reflected in the Fever's record as well, 2-9. But as things have settled down, both for Caitlin Clark and Indiana as a whole, 5 wins in their last 7 games in the last 17 days. We'll talk about the rest of this rookie class and preview the Commissioner's Cup with Miles Ehrlich on the other side of the break, live right here on this Tuesday on the early line. There's been historic marks for more rookies than just Caitlin Clark this season in the W. Break it down on that.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Miles Ehrlich, a senior writer for Winsider, joining us here for a second consecutive segment on this Tuesday on the early line. And Miles, the last two Sunday afternoons have kind of been the encapsulation of this rookie class and matchups between the Indiana Fever and the Chicago Sky. 3 matchups this year between these two franchises, all 3 decided by a single point. 2 of the 3, or all 3 decided by single digits, 2 of the 3 by a single point, including this past Sunday. And what a game it was in the Shy. Between the Sky and the Fever, Angel Reese, 25 points, 16 boards. Caitlin Clark, 17 points, 13 dimes. We showed you the stats this year for Caitlin Clark, the hefty favorite to be Rookie of the Year in the W at minus 950. If anybody is going to catch her, it seems it will be Angel Reese. 8 consecutive double-doubles here for the Chicago Sky on this run. That's the most we've ever seen in a row by a rookie in WNBA history. 25 points. 16 boards on Sunday, the first 25-point, 15-rebound performance by a rookie in the WNBA since Asia Wilson back in 2018. Donnie asked you, is Caitlin Clark matching the extremely high expectations in her rookie campaign? Miles, same exact question for Angel Reese.
Yeah, so I think that not only has Angel Reese exceeded my expectations, I think she's exceeded the expectations of a majority of the front offices around the WNBA. She dropped to 7 in the draft, and I think it won't be very long before we look back at that as a big mistake. All that being said, my questions going into this were not her motor. It was not her rebounding ability. It was her ability to finish. And she has been lower on the field goal percentage side, but she makes up for that with just her grit, her hustle, everything that she was able to do in college, shooting from these weird angles and getting it to fall. But we've also seen growth. And I think that's credit to Teaspoon and to her staff, is that Angel was not just looking to draw fouls the other day. She was making post moves. She was going around contact. And I think that that's that sign of growth that we're seeing now. Like you said, 8 straight double-doubles. She's now second in the WNBA behind Asia Wilson with 11.1 rebounds per game. This has been amazing just to witness. And if Chicago can make a playoff push, then that plus 600 odds that you were talking about doesn't feel as long as they would have before the season.
Miles, if we take a look at some action on the court tonight, we're going to talk Commissioner's Cup. Before we get into the game itself and the participants, for the people that don't know, explain to them what the Commissioner's Cup is and what's at stake today.
Sure. So the Commissioner's Cup started, this will be the fourth season, and it's an in-season tournament, which is kind of like we just saw for the first time on the NBA side. And for this, in this new format that started this year, there was a two-week stretch where every team played every other team in their conference once. So there was a two-week stretch where it was five games. And from those five games, the top-seeded represents each conference. So the Liberty are going back there for the second time in a row after beating Vegas last year. The winning team earns $50,000 per player. The losing team earns $25,000 per player. So they already got paid to be here at this point. But it's a nice little addition in the middle of the season. And yeah, the Liberty hung a banner last year for winning this Commissioner's Cup game. So it's something that both these teams take very seriously, but especially when you think about the rookies on that team who can use a little bit of extra cash.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Liberty knocking off the Las Vegas Aces last year, the Aces winning it the year prior, the Seattle Storm back in 2021, in the first year of the WNBA's Commissioner's Cup. But of course, as Miles just explained, a new format this year. One single game, a championship on the line tonight. The Liberty, a 5-point favorite against the Minnesota Lynx. And Miles, when you look at these two teams, two of the hottest right now all across the W, how do the Lynx and Liberty match up in the Commissioner's Cup title game tonight?
I am very, very interested to just watch the three-point defense from both of these teams, because these are two of the most prolific three-point shooting teams in the WNBA, but they're also two of the highest defenses, two of the best defenses, especially on that perimeter. And when you look at net rating, the Lynx are first, Liberty are second. But you look at scoring, Liberty are first, Lynx are third. It's everywhere. Opposing scoring, Lynx are first, Liberty are third. So I think that there's a lot of evenly matched stuff going on both sides. What it's going to come down to for me, though, it might be the rebounding. And that's something that the Liberty could not lean on last time. So Jonquel Jones, I think, is just a player to highlight. Mm. And the Lynx are 10th in rebounding percentage and the Liberty are second. That's kind of the largest gap between these teams.
If we are taking a look at some of the props to have fun with tonight, you're taking a look at Stewart and Collier, the leaders here at the FanDuel Sportsbook at 19.5, and also similar numbers here to win the MVP of the Commissioner's Cup. We see Stewart at a plus 290, and also Collier the same at a plus 290. What we can anticipate, and also some players that you might be interested in watching tonight in this game.
Back to the rebounding, Jonquel Jones, the Liberty are 17-0 in regular season games when she double-doubles. So, like I said, she dealt with that foul trouble. But the connection on the Liberty side between Sabrina Ionescu and Jonquel Jones, especially lately, has really had the Liberty playing at a different level. Sab has assisted to JJ 52 times. Everyone else on the team combined has done it just 44 times. So if those two are cooking, it's good for New York. On the Minnesota side, Kayla McBride is knocking down 3.3 threes per game at an absurd 46.4%. Bridget Carlton, who has never knocked in more than a three per game, is averaging two a night on 43%. So it's that shooting on that side. And obviously, like you said, Stewie and Nafisa are really always going to be in the middle of it all. So I think that there are scorers everywhere. There's talent everywhere. There's Olympians everywhere. So this is really exciting. And when you look at the odds, it's Sabrina is averaging 20.8 points per game in 10 June games. So she's been really hot for New York.
Sabrina Ionescu was huge on Sunday in the Liberty's victory. 26 points for Sabrina Ionescu in that one. The veteran in double J, Jonquel Jones, has been huge this year for New York. And you mentioned Nafisa Collier, 20 1 point per game, virtually over 10 boards as well. Miles, final question quickly here in the final 30 seconds of this segment. You making the trip out to the island at UBS Arena for tonight's Commissioner's Cup game?
Yep, I'll be there. I'll be there. And I've never been out there for a basketball game before, so I'm excited to see what it looks like. And I hope that the crowd can make the trip as well, because this was kind of a last-minute switch.
Yep, it is the home of the New York Islanders, but I've been to UBS before. A great arena for a sporting event. Miles Ehrlich, a senior writer for Windsider, we appreciate the time. Thank you for being here on this Tuesday, going all around the W. Some early NHL offseason thoughts. Yeah, you're right. Next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
2025 Puck Talk, live right here on this Tuesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Now, the Donnie Dreisaitl household goes back into the Donnie Wrightside household after the Edmonton Oilers came up just a little bit short last night in the Stanley Cup Final in game number 7. Leon Dreisaitl did not score a goal throughout the Stanley Cup Final, but that's neither here nor there. The reason Donnie Wrightside's household is celebrating on this ceremonious day is because Matvei Michkov is on his way to Philadelphia. DRS, when was he selected? In the 2022 NHL draft? He's been, or was it last summer?
The Bedard. Yeah, it was the question was going to be who would actually go number one between Michkov and Bedard. Obviously, Bedard meant number one because you knew he was coming over right away. There was a chance for the Philadelphia Flyers that would never even ever see Michkov if he wasn't released from his contract. But the expectations, Ben, were 3 to 4 years out of when he was drafted. Now, granted, he's not 32 years old. He's, I believe, 18 or 19 when he was drafted. He's so eventually when he came over, that would be fine. But now we're taking a look at him coming over much sooner than expected, which means the Flyers took a risk but got an absolute steal in the draft last year with how quickly he's coming over for them. So that whole rebuilding process for the Flyers ends right now, the minute he comes over, and now you're looking for expectations, certainly the minute he takes the ice in Philadelphia.
And the Flyers were pretty close and were certainly in playoff contention down the final few weeks of the NHL regular season, just missing out on a wild card spot. So Matvei Michkov makes his way to Philadelphia. Already has a season points prop. The over-under stands at 46.5. I can only imagine, Donnie, you are betting the over for Michkov in his rookie campaign in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, one of those players that the minute he comes over as basically a teenager, Ben, he's the best player on the team and expected to be one of those players because going to have an impact on an NHL season, unlike that we've seen in, I don't know, since Eric Lindros coming over. Now, those expectations are lofty and rightfully so, because he should be seen as the savior of the Flyers franchise. And keep in mind, dating back to when the Flyers' inception in what, the late 1960s, that team is absolutely beloved in Philadelphia and has fallen off a cliff. Now, they do have a new, obviously, coach with Tortorella. They have a new regime and general manager, Danny Briere. He also brought over Keith Jones, who was a longtime Philadelphia Flyer, as almost that front office PR guy that can actually talk to the fan base and explain to them exactly what's going on, and a guy that most people like. So things are looking up for the Flyers, but there are massive expectations now. The draft coming up this week and free agency, the Flyers should be expected to make the playoffs next year. As you pointed out, Ben, they weren't expected to do anything this year and basically should have made the playoffs, but they did fold late. But that's obviously the talent on the team as opposed to the coaching or the front office. Things should start getting better immediately in Philadelphia with these news.
Still a relatively long price on Philly, 55-1 to win next year's Stanley Cup. The team that won it this year is the favorite entering next year at 9-1. One of the things I love about hockey, one of the things I love about the Stanley Cup championship odds is, unlike the NBA or even the NFL, where last year's champ or last year's runner-up or last year's team that played in a conference championship gets the benefit from the odds makers, and maybe rightfully so, so many teams around the same price and compacted there in the top five. We've got five teams at a 10-1 number or less, all separated by a dollar. Then the Golden Knights, they're at 11-1 as well. The top six prices, DRS, all just $2 of distinction between those numbers to hoist the Stanley Cup next year.
Very much different, Ben, than other sports here. And you see it time and time again. It's almost like if you can just get hot at the end of the season, have a good goaltender, you can ride that all the way to a Stanley Cup, which makes it fun for a lot of fan bases. The parity truly is there. And as you pointed out, those odds are certainly pointing to that. Where if you say right now, like, hey, the Panthers just won the Stanley Cup, they're going to dominate next year. You know, we're saying that in the NBA, like, well, who's going to beat the Celtics? I don't think anybody's saying right now, like, oh my goodness, nobody's going to be able to beat the Panthers next year. They should run away with things. So I love the parity. And hockey gives every team a chance. And as long as you make it into the tournament at the end of the season, you actually have a legitimate chance to make a deep run as long as you get good goaltending.
Will next year finally be the year? Only two teams in those top 10 prices that we showed you from the Great White North. Now it will be 31 years plus since a Canadian team last won the Stanley Cup, the 1993 Montreal Canadiens. That's more than a three-decade drought. I believe the NFL Awards show is on Thursday, and that will be when we crown this year's winners. But Connor McDavid, after winning the Conn Smythe, albeit in a losing effort, more than likely to win the Hart Trophy. That's the MVP. He's the favorite entering next year at plus 180, followed by the Avalanche's Nathan MacKinnon. Donnie's guy, the Sway Man, Jeremy Swayman, as well. More on the early line. Hour 3 comes away next.